This is ensemble member K. Todd Freeman, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
Tracy.
Martha.
It's really nice to be able to talk to you. I think that I'll just start in the obvious place, which is for the last couple of years, 2 years, your main concentration in your theatrical life has been as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're back on stage as an actor. What, first of all, what does that feel like? Is that...
It feels great. The responsibilities are different. So I have less responsibility in some ways. I do a play out there now as an actor, and people are either going to like that play or not like that play, and I'm not responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain freedom involved in that. However, I also have to do a play 8 times a week.
Yep.
And as a writer, once the play's up, I don't have to do that. And so that carries its own set of obligations. You have to take care of yourself in a play like this, which has a lot of physical, vocal demands. You have to sort of take care of yourself and monitor yourself over the course of a week. So different responsibilities. But
what made you choose this play?
Well, for one thing, it's fun. I'm glad to be engaged in something that is fun, which isn't to say, I mean, it's also hard. It's taxing. But the play is funny, and it's very alive, very visceral. And as an actor, it's not a... I don't know quite if this is the right way to phrase it. It's not a thinking play. I don't have to think too much. I can just sort of act.
Your last play with us as an actor was Betrayal.
Right.
You know, and it's interesting because that play is, while more... It was shorter.
Yeah.
It was certainly less physically, in an obvious way, less physically demanding. Very precise. But I would imagine that in certain ways, this play, the fun factor is higher, right? Because your character gets a kind of release.
He's sort of constantly in the act of release.
Yes.
And the character in Betrayal is sort of constantly in the act of suppression.
Yes.
Release is more fun
yes.
than suppression.
You know, Amy one time said that to me about doing August Osage County, which is, of course, her role is incredibly arduous, but she said, I get to have a kind of, I get to release all of that.
Right, right.
And she was contrasting that in a certain way to the role of Violet, where that character refuses to let go of
Playing Robert in Betrayal for 5 months, that character is so clenched and so repressed that, and willfully repressed, that's the kind of thing that can give you an ulcer. I mean, as Amy points out, your body doesn't know you're lying.
Right.
And that's the case whether you're involved in the expression or suppression of the emotional stuff.
Yeah. One wonders which Tracy is easier to live with on a day-to-day basis. Hey, Tracy, you are about halfway through the run of the play. Has it changed in the time that you've been working on it?
They always change over a course of time. I always feel they kind of don't get good until about 2 weeks after we open. That's an exaggeration.
Yes.
Of course, they feel more lived in. They feel more settled in for me as an actor 2 weeks in. And I think it's because... It's only about 2 weeks after opening that I've learned the entire play.
Yes.
But I not only know my role, but I know the other people's roles. I know sort of the play from beginning to end, and I have I can sort of see the big picture of that in a way that I can't early on in the process. Maybe other actors are better at that than me. I don't know. But for me, and because you're able to see the whole mechanism, I think you're able to help that mechanism work.
Have you ever... I've been in plays as an actor and been many weeks nigh on to closing and think, oh, now I get it.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time. Or closing night.
Yes.
Out there going, well, my God, on. I can't believe I didn't figure that out earlier.
Yeah, can we start over? Trace, you know, Mamet writes with such precision, and yet the conceit of the play is that there is a kind of spontaneous and loose relationship among those characters on stage. And it looks, as you three actors inhabit those roles, that there is a kind of almost randomness to certain sections of the dialogue. What do you think, I mean, what is that as a challenge for an actor? What do you do?
That's a good question. And you start with as far as I'm concerned, and this is my third production of a Mamet play. I've done Glengarry twice before and then this play. And I think you start with language. I think if you listen to Mamet, he would also tell you that you end with language as well. But truth is, there is subtext in American Buffalo. There is stuff that we supply as actors that isn't necessarily on the page. But you start with what's on the page. You start with the words. You start with the rhythm. You start with the syncopation. You start with the iambic pentameter. You start with all of that technical stuff, how to spit out those lines in a way that simply makes sense. You start with that, and then you can start to sort of fill in the blanks and humanize it a bit. You know, you essentially, I think you have to start with technique, and then you fill it in from there. I don't know that there's another way to do it, and I think sometimes I think these plays they get lionized in a way that perhaps is not healthy. You start to think of American Buffalo by its reputation, mm-hmm. as opposed to the simple questions we have to ask ourselves as actors when we go out there. Who is my character? What does he want? Those are the questions we have to start with, right? But we actually come into American Buffalo with a lot of baggage that the play has accumulated over years. Oh, these characters are tough guys, or this character is scary, or this is, quote-unquote, the part of the play that's supposed to be scary. And you actually have to throw all of that out the window.
Don't you think one of the most crippling ones for actors, and ones that we constantly impose on ourselves, is where there are kind of iconic roles? Oh, that guy's different from me in this way. We think of the way in which we can't possibly be that character.
Right. And then you wind up doing something really fake in an attempt to accomplish that. Yeah, it's not the way to go. You know, when we did Glengarry here, Amy told me so many actors would come in to audition for the role of Roma, and they would walk in the door doing some sort of New York accent. I don't know where that came from. They had seen Al Pacino do it in the movie or something, and they got it in their mind that he was, well, he's a Chicago real estate salesman.
Right.
He's not scary Al Pacino. He lives in Chicago, and he sells real estate.
Right.
That's where you have to start from.
Right. Yeah. You know, the American Buffalo, we have it positioned in our season that we're thinking about under this idea of belief. And it's certainly true that your character, Teach, in American Buffalo, has a lot of things that he believes in or propagates as theories about living and what reality is, and those are his beliefs, moral codes. But if you'll forgive me for saying so, he violates them constantly.
Right.
What do you think he, Teach, really believes in, or does he have the luxury of beliefs?
Yeah, I don't think there's a... I don't think his ethos is that carefully developed or that carefully thought out for all of the talking he does about it. The fact of the matter is he's a guy who needs money, who needs cash money to get through the day. Mm-hmm. And if that's your – if that is the sort of the sum total of your ethos in some ways, then all that other stuff is bluster, is cover, is a way to disguise the fact that you're desperate.
Yes. But it's actually very, very touching, right? Because he wants to be a hero. I mean, all of us probably have some version of how we make ourselves heroic, but He wants to be a hero, and he wants to be a hero in the eyes of that man, Donnie.
Yeah.
And do you feel like that, thusly, he's got this, you know, I'm going to tell you. Well, he's teaching. He's in there teaching those right. guys what's what.
Yeah, it's kind of desperately sad, right?
Yeah.
That you've made life on your little block so important that you've lost all sense of proportion in a way. But again, that's something that I can identify with, that I think is just human nature, that we make our world the world. And sometimes yeah. it's harder to see the big picture.
One of the things that I find deeply touching about your performance is he's so vulnerable. I mean, the guy comes in with it, which you know, now, as you say, in the lore of Mamet plays, that entrance is fantastic, right? He comes in cursing these women. In fact, what has happened, he's gotten his feelings hurt.
Yeah. He's gotten his feelings hurt. He's hungry, and he's taken some food off
yes.
of one of their plates.
Isn't
and they've
that
embarrassed
sweet?
Him. Yeah, and it's they've embarrassed him.
Yes.
And that's really where all that sort of rage comes from at the beginning. But, you know, I think that's one of the interesting things about approaching this role as an older man. I think typically Teach is played by somebody younger than myself. I'm 44 years old. And I think we've aged the play up just a little bit. Me and Donnie are a little bit older than it's normally done. And I think that's really helped me because I do have a lot more sympathy for this guy than I might have as a younger man.
You mean you might have been more judgmental about him?
I think so. A lot of people who... you know, a lot of people who sort of lead with that cover, that bluster, blowhards.
Yeah.
I think as a younger person, you see through that, and you're so disgusted by
yeah.
what you see as their hypocrisy. It's hard to be forgiving about that. And I think when you get older, you realize sort of what's underneath all that, what's created all that, and you actually have some sympathy.
Yes.
That people have had to create such a construct in which to live.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the play is set in a junk shop, beautifully rendered in our production by Kevin DePinette. What do you make? I mean, that's very appropriate for the play in a lot of ways. Will you just, for a second, you know, sort of amplify what you understand as that setting?
I understand where it is in Chicago. I understand that it's, 1975 Chicago and that the city's changed a lot in that period of time. But to descend into that world, into that junk shop. I mean, for me, it's home. I feel it as home. Teach establishes in the play that he lives in a hotel, meaning a kind of transient hotel, I would assume.
Yeah.
And so I imagine it's a bed and a dresser is all his that is in his room. So this junk shop for him is a kind of home. This is a place where he has relationships, and he can tell jokes. He can play cards. He can socialize. It's a social space, and home as social space. So I actually view the junk shop as a comforting place.
It's interesting, isn't it, Tris? I was just thinking about this in your play, Superior Donuts, which just closed. It's very successful run on Broadway. There was a character, Lady, whom we understand doesn't, we're not sure where she might actually live.
Right.
But that little sort of tatty donut shop is her home, and that's made very poignant when the donut shop has been closed, and she's just to watch her break down at that.
Yeah.
It's similar.
Yeah, well, that's it's one of arrows in the quiver of workplace
yes.
plays
yes.
as opposed to plays set in homes. Yeah, I think one of the challenges of any play set in a workplace is how do you make this place as important to these characters as a home would be to the characters in a play like, say, August Osage
yes.
County.
Yeah. Can I ask you now, Trace, just slightly apart from American Buffalo, you and I the other day were acknowledging, okay, you're in this play, now you're acting. Recently a production of Killer Joe has opened in Chicago at Profiles Theater under the direction of our fellow ensemble member, Rick Snyder. So there are kind of two Tracy Letzes who are living vividly in Chicago right now on the stage. You'll be moving this production to the McCarter. And there are now productions. The national tour of August will be here back in Chicago in February. That mm-hmm. extends to the end of the year. Certainly, you know that your play is, and as Sapira Donuts and your other plays are being licensed. What about that? Like those virtual lives that are geographically dispersed.
I'm very lucky in that the plays have been embraced in such a way that they continue to be done. People continue to find things in them and reasons to do them. It's odd. I mean, at some point you start to feel, while you feel terrific ownership of the play, at the same time, you've let it go.
Yeah.
You've let it go out into the world, and people are going to do with it, make of it what they will. So it's very gratifying. Any playwright would hope that their plays continue to be done and continue to have resonance for not only for the people doing them but for audiences. But I'm enjoying it.
Do you have any little threads of ideas in your head as a writer?
How do you mean? You mean, upcoming stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, lots of stuff.
Do you have any time to actually sit down and write, or are you just
no,
it's just
not right now.
While
we're doing American Buffalo eight
yeah,
shows a week.
Yeah, fair dues. Well, Trace, I thank you very much for talking to me, and I think you're doing terrific work, and it's just great to have you on stage.
Thanks, Martha.